Jesus Christ, His only Son. I believe in the virgin birth. I believe in the man of sorrows, bruised for iniquities. I believe in the Lamb who was crucified and hung between two thieves. I believe in the resurrection on the third and glorious day. And I believe in the empty tomb and the stone that the angel rolled away.
Good afternoon. As I always say, good morning and good evening, wherever you are listening to this at this time. This is Eddie Huff, and this is Fresh Black Coffee. We're hoping to wake you up, and maybe you can send this to wake some other people up. Hopefully it's news you can use, and more than that. So anyway, this is actually our second new broadcast, the reboot of Fresh Black Coffee. This is how I began so many years ago, thanks to Bruce DeLay and the people at Truth in Focus, and then my years at KFAQ in Tulsa, and I've been off the air for a long time. But anyway, we're hoping to revive the info, and hopefully you'll enjoy it, and we'll stick with us. We intend to begin doing this about once a week, and then we'll eventually, hopefully, move into doing it more regularly. All right, let's dive right in. This week, today, by the way, is May 29th, and it's been a rainy week in Tulsa, and apparently it's going to be rainy again for the next week, although it's out, nice outside today. But anyway, beyond that, hey, we were supposed to be doing a race riot celebration. They were going to, in fact, they've changed the name to a massacre. It just sounds better, massacre, instead of a riot. You know, riot says that the people rioted, and we really don't know who rioted if we say riot, right? Because too often, rioting has been associated with black people, although if you look historically, there have probably been more white riots than there are black riots. So if you go worldwide, I'm not just speaking about the U.S., but in the U.S., every time you hear riot, you always think of a race riot. And in this case, actually, it was white people rioting in this one. So riot is not good enough for the people, so they decided to call it a massacre, and nobody really knows how many people died. Nobody really knows who was more at fault than the other. In the end, it never should have happened, okay? And I don't want to get into all that, but let me just say this. They were going to have a celebration of this as 100 years later. It happened in 1921, and they were going to have this big week-long memorial or remembrance, but it sounded more like a celebration. You were supposed to have John Legend and some other celebrities coming in to be here for it. And then you were going to have, actually, I heard Joe Biden was coming in to help celebrate it. Stacey Abrams, oh my goodness, thank God we were saved from that. But anyway, it's one of those deals. It's been canceled. Let me just get down to it. It has been canceled. My feeling is that it was just going to cost too much money, and they didn't have the money, they didn't have the funds to really do this, so they had to cancel it, and I'm actually happy, because nobody should be celebrating. It would be like the 100th year celebration of the Holocaust, with music groups, bands playing, people singing, and celebrities coming to honor the 100th year of Kristallnacht, or of the building of the concentration camps. Who does that? Do we have concerts and celebrations of December 7th? Did we have a 100-year celebration, or will we have a 100-year celebration of December 7th, 1941? I doubt it. So anyway, this is all just a mess, but thank goodness someone got sense, or for whatever reason, they've canceled it. Let me just deal with the whole deal of the race riot, some other aspect. A lot of people don't understand what this really is. The reason Tulsa has been made into this big deal is, and it was revealed back in 2001 when Johnny Cochran and some attorneys from, or law instructors and attorneys from Harvard came into town and made the first big deal about it. And they said something very interesting. They said that Tulsa is the linchpin in the entire reparations movement. In other words, if they can get the statute of limitations waived for the Tulsa riot in 1921, they feel they can get the statute of limitations waived for reparations and slavery. So that's what this whole deal is really about. And it's up to us to fight it, the state legislatures, the federal legislative branch, the Senate, and everybody needs to fight this tooth and nail, because that's where they're headed. They're trying to get this reparations passed. I think in the end, Joe Biden is probably going to try to do something by executive order, because I don't think anybody in their right minds really wants to go down that road of waiving a statute of limitations on this or anything else. But anyway, that's what this is all about. Our Senator James Lankford was on the board. He was on the, in fact, at one time he was head of the Race Riot Commission, and then he was demoted from that position. And then finally, about a week or two ago, he finally bowed out. I think he finally, after several years, realized the mess he had stepped into. Listen, I don't want you to forget. I don't want people out there to forget, especially in Oklahoma, that this guy actually thought this was a good idea at one point. And then now, when the time had come, he finally realized the error in his ways. So that's something I wanted to deal with. But also in keeping with that, what they've been doing here in Tulsa is looking for bodies. They keep trying to come up with a larger number than has been accepted. So far, I think they said over 300, 350+ people were killed. Probably about 50 or 60 of those were white people that died also in this melee. And the rest were black citizens of the Greenwood District of Tulsa. So what they've been doing is trying to listen to people that said, well, I heard there were bodies here. I heard there were bodies here. I heard there were bodies here. So they couldn't find them anywhere that people said they were. So where do you think they dug? This is for people across the nation. This is really hilarious if you think about it. They decided, let's dig in the cemetery. What do you think you're going to find in a cemetery? It's like trying to find poop, and where do you look in a toilet? That's the first place you would look, in the toilet or in a sewer. And so they're trying to find bodies. Well, what do you think you're going to find in a cemetery? So last count I heard, I think they found 8 bodies, maybe 8 or 18, and they're going to try now to exhume them and do DNA on them, doing DNA research, and try to find out who these bodies belong to. Here's a really, really strange and interesting fact regarding that. The graveyard that they chose to dig in is what's called the Potter's Field. It's the graveyard where people were buried that couldn't afford to be buried anywhere else. So the city ended up taking that on and burying these people. So that's where they say, well, what do you think you're going to find? You're going to find a whole lot of people. To me, honestly, there's a real simple way to determine this, okay? I don't know why no one has ever thought of it. Maybe they have. Maybe I'm all off in my thinking here. But my thinking is this. You go back to 1921. You look at the birth records. You look at the death records. You look at the records of anybody who claimed to have died in 1921. You find out how many of those people were, and then find out how they died. If you have 1,000 people that you can't account for, and they're all black, and they're all from that area, and they disappeared suddenly, 1921, the chances are very good that they might have passed away in the race riot or massacre, whatever you want to call it. So if not, then just sit down and shut up, okay? I mean, we're going through the weirdest things. It's like all of a sudden, black people had no records. They don't know where they came from. They don't know where they went. They don't, you know, all of that. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. Okay. So anyway, to me, the very simple place to begin is go back to your census data, or go back to your funeral directors, go back to your records of births and deaths, find out who died in 1921. And around that time, voila, it gives you a good place to start. If you find all of a sudden you don't have records on thousands of people or hundreds of people or whatever, the chances are they might have been killed in this event. If not, then chances are this is overblown and it's back to where we were, people trying to make something out of nothing. Tulsa's being used. North Tulsa's being used. And I feel sorry for the people up there. And you've got them, they've actually now built, or they're in the process of building, a race riot museum. And they're upset because there's a larger museum in Washington, D.C. commemorating the Tulsa race riot, or massacre as they call it, than the one they're building. So they want to build a bigger, better one. But if you look at the names associated with, it's the usual people that are always making money, have their hands in the till, and they're getting paid to do this. Trust me. If you don't believe me, look it up. Find out. I'm not going to name any names, but you look up the names and you will find it's the same people with their hands in the city and the states and the federal government's pockets to try to get some money for themselves. So that's what that's all about. Other than that, reparations in general, bad idea. Reparations is just a waste of time and money for everyone. And here's why. And this is something, by the way, I've got a book coming out. It's actually finished. We're just editing and trying to get it out there to you. But and it'll be out probably in the next month, hopefully after all these years and years and trying to get this thing done. But anyway, and I talk about this in the book. Think about this. Who gets paid the reparations? Who pays them? Who gets them? My prime example is Barack Obama. His father's people from Africa sold us into slavery. His mother's people were slave owners, so they bought us. Barack actually should pay twice. He should pay on the African side for selling us into slavery, and he should pay on the American side for buying us from slavery. So that's something that we have to consider. You've got many people. What about people from Africa that came after emancipation? People from the islands, from the Caribbean that came in, now they've settled in and they've been there 100 years. How much black do you have to have in you? My former administrative assistant, Rebecca, found out she has about 5% sub-Saharan African in her. And she's actually part Hispanic, part Caucasian, mostly. But, and then her kids, do her parents? Because if she's 5%, her parents were probably 10%, one of her parents at least, and on it goes up the ladder. So who gets, does she get a little money? Can she claim it? What percentage? You know, if you had the 1% rule, if you're 1% black, you're black, then, hey, she should get the money. You know, I'm half German. My dad was from Mississippi. His dad was from Jamaica, but his mother's parents were from here. So, again, how much do I get? So you get where I'm getting at. It's just silly. It's ridiculous. And then, of course, you got the Dave Chappelle argument, the day after reparations, where the same people who had the money before will have it again because the people who they're going to give this supposed all these millions to who are looking for this cash will have blown it in expensive cars, jewelry, clothes, booze, alcohol, you name it. It's just, if you don't know how to handle money now, you won't know how to handle it later. Just if you want an example, go to the NFL and NBA and find out how many of those guys that have signed these million-dollar contracts, how many of them have nothing left now. Another prime example is MC Hammer. If you remember Hammer, Hammer was in big trouble because he owed the IRS all of this money, all this tax money. So first of all, the tax man's going to get probably half of the money. And then from there, it just, you know, goes on and on. So anyway, that's what I want to deal with here to begin with. One last thing here in this half, and then I'm going to give us a little break. Dealing with COVID, the COVID vaccine. You know, for all of these years, we have heard since it came out, well, I say years, it feels like years over the past year, Donald Trump called it the China virus. And he was just beaten up. And anybody that mentioned it, Facebook would block you if you mentioned it was a China virus. It came from China, da, da, da. Now we find out what? Yes, it started in the Wuhan lab first. And then China denied it until this week. And then all of a sudden, miraculously, now they say, well, yes, it did. But it's because lab workers were bitten by bats. Now, we're back to the bats. We still got the bats, but it wasn't in the Wuhan market. It was in the lab. And so bats in the lab bit these scientists, virologists, as they call them, and they got it and they passed it on to the world. Okay, come on, come on. Are you buying this? I'm not buying it. You shouldn't buy it either. So eventually, I think we're going to find out. I think China finally had to come clean because starting with Australia, Australia actually has been more on the case of China than the U.S. And of course, Biden, who's been friendly with China, has been covering, in my opinion, has been covering for them. And now finally they can't cover any longer. So China is changing its story. The world is starting to wake up a little bit. But we need to keep the pressure on. We need to keep the pressure on. So we're going to take a little break here and we'll be back in a minute. I have lots more for you. Black at you here, as I like to say, black at you. Hey, continuing on this COVID discussion here a little bit, this week I happened to see the former head of the Public Health Service, Admiral Brent Giroir. Giroir is how I pronounce it. I don't know how you really pronounce it. It's G-I-R-O-I-R. I think it's French, Giroir. Can you say that? Yeah, I like the way you say that. But anyway, Brett Giroir, he was the head of the National Public Health Service, and you probably saw him or remember seeing him with President Trump and Fauci and all the other people. He's the one guy who has actually been pretty truthful and tried to stick with the facts on this deal, and he's heard so many untruths that he is finally saying, enough, I can't do this anymore. He came out this week and I saw him stating that this plan that Biden has, his recovery plan and his COVID recovery plan, he's saying that it's actually the same plan they came up with under President Trump. Now, those of us who have been paying attention for the last year, who are Trump supporters, we know that, yes, this is the same plan that the former president, President Trump, had in place for the last, probably at least 9 months, okay? So he's been working on, he had the accelerated research plan to give the okay to freedom to choose. You know, in other words, if you wanted to get the vaccination, you could get it. You don't have to. He's the one who pushed for the research, for the breakthroughs. And Biden is trying to take credit for it. His whole 100-day plan is the same 100-day plan that they already had in place under the Trump administration. Biden, like Democrats so often do, just trying to take credit for it. You know, it's really funny. It reminds me when I was a kid growing up and Russia was a superpower. It was actually the Soviet Union. They were known, and it was a joke that they would take credit for everything. Anything America did, they took credit for it. The Democrats just are doing the same thing. They're trying to take credit for everything good and blame everything bad on other people. It's not new, people. It's not new, okay? So I just want you to know that in case you were wondering. By the way, I want to say something else about the whole Biden. And I think when I say, oh, Biden administration, I think you'll understand where I'm getting at. I spoke about this last week. Last week, I did a little 10-minute or 12-minute test run of this program. I talked about the diehard. I did an article, it's probably 15 years ago, maybe. No, it couldn't be that long. It's whenever Obama first raised his ugly head, back when he popped on the scene, and I was talking about how I was reminded of Die Hard. If you remember the first Die Hard, and those who have heard me say this before, please allow me to do this for other people. But in the first Die Hard, there was a Nakatomi Bank building, and this is the one with Bruce Willis, and he happened to be a cop. He was there at a Christmas celebration for his wife, and these terrorists came in and took over the bank building and held the employees and people in the celebration hostage. The FBI came in all big and bad and with a lot of bravado, and they were going to take down these terrorists, these terrible terrorists. Anyway, they were just dummies. I don't know why they made the FBI look so dumb. But in any event, you find out in the end they were not really terrorists. They were just high-end bank robbers. They were high-tech bank robbers. And their whole thing made it look like they were terrorists, but all they were really doing was trying to steal billions of dollars in these bonds, bearer bonds, they're called, which are cashable. That was what Bruce Willis determined, and he ended up saving the day, of course. Well, in the Obama-Biden administration, and it's even more so now the case, these people are just, they're just robbing the bank. We think they have all these sinister motives of trying to turn us into communists and socialists and so on and so on and so on. That's a byproduct. Yeah, it looks that way. But really, deep down, all they're really doing is robbing the bank, the federal bank, which is you and I, because we are the ones who pay taxes. We're the ones who put money into the federal coffers, and therefore they're stealing. Oh, Biden's been doing it for years. You know, it's interesting. Obama made a statement probably about 3-4 months ago saying, and he was talking about Trump, which I don't get, a guy who comes in as a millionaire, a billionaire, multi-billionaire, and actually lost money in the 4 years he was in office because he sacrificed for this nation. And Obama has nerve enough to say that no one should benefit from holding public office. Are you kidding me? Obama, do you know how much money what his net worth was when he went into running for the president, when he went into the White House? It was about $1.6 million, okay? Remember that. That's a lot of money. And before that, in the State House in Chicago, in Illinois, he was only worth about $100,000 to $300,000. Then he becomes a state senator for about 2 years and then ends up becoming president and has $1.6 million. Now he is worth, his family is worth over $100 million, $100 million. The Bidens were known to have a net worth of about $300,000 when he became vice president. Now they're up in the millions, many millions, $20 to $30 million. Where does that money come from? Has anybody asked? Does anybody care? So the gall that Obama would have to say that no one should become rich holding public office, it's just beyond the pale, because he needs to start with himself. And this is how these people work. And honestly, it's really disgusting. And most of it has been by stealing from the American people. An example, this just came out, Secretary of Energy, who is a former New York state rep, Jennifer Granholm, she invested in an energy company named Proterra. Biden just did a big contract with them. Well, it was finally somebody discovered it, and she had to sell all of her shares. But she had millions of dollars of shares in this company, which she would have become very, very rich, but someone discovered it. And I believe she probably still made out like a bandit. All these people are stinking rich, and they want you to think that they worry about the common person. No, they're worried about themselves. Like I said, if you haven't in a long time, go back and watch Die Hard, the original Die Hard. Think about the Nakatomi Bank building and these bank robbers, high-tech bank robbers, and then think about the Obama and the Biden administration. It's the same thing. Okay. I've got one more thing I want to discuss here today. And essentially, it's dealing with critical race theory, CRT, critical race theory, which is being taught in many schools, universities, what they used to call higher learning. It's actually lowered learning nowadays because they're not learning much. They're learning just junk. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's more emphasis being spent on sociology and these theories than there is on actual science and technology. they don't care because they want your kids to focus on that while their kids are over here on the other side figuring out how to make all the money. That's something you need to know. But anyway, critical race theory actually comes from a Marxist idea called critical theory. And the critical theory basically is nothing but criticizing what the dominant culture stands for. Okay. And the dominant culture in America has been capitalist. It's been mainly white because our government, the majority of the population in America was white. Everybody who was doing business, everyone who was doing anything publicly good was white at the time. Now, yes, there were some evil white men, okay, if you will, if that makes you feel better. But there have always been evil black men, brown men, red men. I don't want to go into that today. I don't want to discuss about how Africans killed each other, Indians killed each other, the Mayans, which is Mexicans, were sacrificing each other and killing each other. I mean, you know, we don't have to go into that. Later, maybe I'll go into greater detail. But what I want to get into is everyone is trying to erase and make us forget the good that has been done by the descendants of Europeans, okay? You want to wipe all that out. If you want to wipe it out, feel free. But, man, we're going to end up like the third world countries that are trying to come to us, all right? But critical race theory, as I said, getting back to that, is nothing more than an offshoot of critical theory, and it's just they've thrown race in there, and their whole aim is to criticize the dominant culture, dominant theories and laws and everything that exists, and they're going to criticize it, and try to destroy it and replace it with their own bent ideology. So whenever you hear critical race theory mentioned, particularly in schools, in the education of your children, you have to be careful because here's how I've seen this for several years. Think of this. If I am rich and I want to ensure that my children and their children remain rich and in power, what's the best way of doing that? It's by convincing you and others that you and your children don't have a chance at success, right? And how do I do that? I tell you, I pick out an enemy. I find an enemy. Those people are going to hold you down. They're keeping you down. But I will help you. So don't worry about it. You don't have to work hard. You don't have to study hard. Don't worry. I'm going to give you this stuff for free, and I'll make sure they give you stuff for free, and then you'll be good. So what happens? You become lazy. You become complacent. You sit back. You're bitter at the one group that's rich, and then you become just, yeah, lazy. It's the only way to put it. And then what happens? I still teach my kids. I make my kids go to school. I make my kids go to work hard. I find a good university. I find good jobs. It becomes the good old boy system, good old girl system. That's the way that works. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to convince the black community. They're trying to convince the Hispanic community. They're trying to convince other communities that white conservatives and black conservatives, anybody that's conservative basically nowadays, but particularly white people, are mean and evil, and they will never let you succeed. And because you can't succeed, we're going to give you money for all the kids you have in wedlock or out of wedlock. We're going to pay you not to work. We're going to increase your unemployment. We're going to give you these COVID checks. We're going to give you this, that, and the other. And in the end, you become lazier and lazier. And you lose, eventually you lose your whole vision and optimism of ever achieving the American dream. And the American dream is that you work hard, you believe, and you will succeed. And that's what I've taught my children. That's what all successful people have taught their children. The way you can tell if it's being taught or not is when your children do much better than you did. My parents, my mother was a German peasant. My dad came out of segregated Jim Crow Mississippi. Yet, when they retired, they were able to put me through college, and I have achieved way beyond anything they could have achieved. And my kids have taken it another step and have achieved way beyond anything that I ever imagined. But it's because I never let them get away with lazy thinking. I made them I never told them that I had a C average when I went to high school and college. If they came home with less than an A, they were worried. I wasn't going to kill them, but I didn't let them know that. And they always strove, and they all achieved very well, and they all make a lot of money, have good jobs, are doing very well. And I'm not saying this to pump me up or anything. I'm just saying this because that's the formula. I have friends that have gone both ways. And the ones who have followed the same model, their children have succeeded. They've succeeded. Their grandchildren are succeeding. The ones who decided to buy into this whole thing of it's somebody else's fault, somebody's holding me down, then those have all failed, okay? So anyway, that's what I wanted to get to. And just the only last thing I want to deal with was a bond issue that has been up in Tulsa. They're voting on a bond issue. We haven't had school here for most of the year. Most of Tulsa public schools hasn't even been in session, yet they're asking for several million dollars now going forward. And they're worried. I think they're worried for the first time that people don't want to pass a bond issue because what are we paying for since we haven't been getting anything out of these teachers or our classrooms in a year, maybe even more than a year, because it actually began in the early spring of and winter of 2020. So that's what's going on. Anyway, I'm going to stop for this week. There's lots more, of course, and there will be lots more next week. I do thank you all for listening and hope you will tune in again on this podcast station. And if you want to write me at freshblackcoffee@gmail.com, freshblackcoffee@gmail.com. Give your comments, thumbs up, thumbs down. You like it, you don't like it, something you'd like me to discuss. And then we'll go from there. We're going to have guests as well, okay? So anyway, thank you very much and have a wonderful, wonderful week.